This is a production of Cornell University.
It's 4:49, and I'd officially like to call the March 8, 2012 student assembly meeting to order. Trustee, can you call the roll?
Dallas?
Here.
Block?
Here.
Breeden?
Present.
Brown?
Here.
Chopra?
Here.
Desai?
Aye.
Francisco?
Here.
Adam Gitlin?
Here.
Ross Gitlin?
Here.
Goldberg?
Here.
Florjani?
Yeah.
Hoffman?
Here.
Kay?
Here.
Lee?
Here.
Mueller?
Here.
Meller?
Here.
Sorry. Muir?
Here.
Nicoletti?
Here.
Pinkney?
Here.
Patel?
Excuse.
Rapp?
Yes.
Rao?
Yes.
Skelfo?
Excuse.
Solman? Trefison?
Here.
Wolford?
Here.
Yatarian?
She'll be here in 2 minutes. Yatarian.
No, Yatarian. Oh.
Raverett? Santangelo?
Yep.
That's all.
All right, so we're actually going to skip through the third part of our agenda. In the audience, we have the leaders of the University Academic Calendar Committee, Mr. Jeffrey Doyle, he's a university registrar, and the Dean of Students, Bill Fry. So they're here to talk about, Dean of Faculty, sorry about that. They're here to talk about the Academic Calendar Committee, so if you would all come to the front and hopefully bring up another All right, so thank you all for coming here today. Where is Jeffrey Block? Okay, great. He was going to introduce you all, so take it away.
All right, great. So thanks for coming, and thank you all for coming. This is the calendar committee that we've been working on. They've done a lot of work on their own free time, and especially Natalie's really taking the role in focusing on the student effort. So this is the, I guess you guys want to introduce yourselves, but these are three of the faculty members that are leading the committee. And one thing to consider, take into consideration all the different changes before you make a comment, because any change that we would make to the changes has a big impact in a lot of other different ways. So, with that, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. So I'm Jeff Doyle. I'm a plant biology in CALS and former director of the Division of the Biological Sciences, undergraduate biology. So I don't think I need to say anything more to that, except to, just to say that Jeffrey's been very active in the committee, too. So now that Jeffrey will be
within
Jeffrey,
that you're the chair of the committee.
I'm the chair of the committee, yes. Right.
Remember?
Yes.
I'm Kathy DeBusky. I'm the University Registrar. And I'm not on the faculty, but thank you for thinking that over.
Bill Fry, Dean of Faculty.
Kathy, did you have a chance to bring over copies of the calendar changes, or would you like us to pull them up on our laptop?
Could you pull them up? I thought they were, did you distribute them as part of the agenda?
But it was never sent over. That's okay. Could you direct us? It's on the Dean of Faculty website. Mm-hmm. All right, and Mohit, you have the website. So could you send that over to SA listeners right now? That'd be great. All right, so while we're sending out the changes, if you could just give us just an overview of what the changes are, what type of topics you've been talking about. I know you've presented at numerous other forums about the changes. So just give us a general overview as well as what you'd like to focus our discussion on, any recommendations you'd like to see for us, and then we'll set up a speaker list and start the conversation.
Sure. Let me start by giving you just a little history of the committee. So this is a committee formed under the aegis of the university faculty, which has responsibility for the academic calendar. And so my involvement, it starts with Dean Fry asking me to serve as chair. This is actually the summer of 2010, and it came in the wake of the suicides in the preceding semester. And there are many reasons one might look at the academic calendar, but the reason that I got involved in it was primarily because the question that was put to me, and it's been put to Dean Fry, was is there any way that by making modifications to the long-standing academic calendar, it hadn't been modified in many, many years except for the introduction of the Labor Day break, is there any way that that calendar could be manipulated to help reduce student stress and mitigate the problem, particularly in the spring semester, that very long period when there are no breaks? So that's really where we started, or I started anyway, with my involvement in the calendar committee. And so by the beginning of the fall 2010 semester, we pulled together a group of members for the committee, discussed who that ought to be. We have wide representation on the committee. A couple of faculty are represented, staff members are represented, and also students as well. We started by asking one student from the student assembly to join the committee. He unfortunately was unable to come to a meeting throughout the first semester, and so eventually Natalie was asked to be on the committee, and she joined us, I think, in March of 2011, actually. So we were without student representation for a little while, but eventually we had that, and Jeffrey's joined us more recently this semester when it looked like Natalie wasn't going to be able to speak. And we also have representation from the graduate student and professional student group, so there's quite a wide representation there. So what we did was in the first period of time, we really did a lot of just brainstorming. There were certain things that we knew we couldn't do with the calendar. We couldn't, for example, end up with commencement being the same weekend at Cornell as Ithaca College. There isn't any way to have that many people in Ithaca at the same time. There are constraints, in other words, built into the calendar along those lines. And we discovered what those were, discussed them. We had some meetings with the IC registrar, for example, about things like that. So everything was pretty much on the table for the calendar. There really were very few things. Probably the only thing that was something we had to do really was to keep the Labor Day holiday, because that had just been decided before, so that wasn't actually up for discussion at all. But pretty much anything else was, including particularly moving commencement. And this is a big issue. We heard rumors that various groups didn't like commencement on Memorial Day weekend, and other people did, and so on and so forth. So that was one of the big issues, because it's an anchor point for the whole spring semester. Whatever you do with commencement really makes a big difference in what you do with the rest of the time of the semester. So we started working on things. A number of things came up. I do want to make the point that there were no constraints put on us. We were not told to do any particular thing. So I know it's a big issue, and because the Sun's made an issue of it at times back in last year, actually, about senior week, for example. So I know this is an issue people are very concerned about, but I want to tell you that nobody told us that we should do anything about senior week. Okay, just I want to get that out on the table right away. There was no discussion that said from anybody that said, oh, it's a horrible thing, we should eliminate it or reduce it or anything like that. Instead, pretty much everything in the calendar we looked at as a potential source of days if we could consolidate anything in any particular way to deploy for other purposes, such as for putting in mental health break days and things like that, additional vacation days. So that was really the conceptual background of the calendar. So everything is on the table. Nothing is sacrosanct. We could do anything we want in terms of planning. Now understand, too, that this calendar is only a recommendation that we're going to make eventually. We'll make that recommendation after we get, we're at the stage now of getting input on recommendations that we have in this provisional calendar that you'll see here. And we're going to take those recommendations, make modifications as we see fit, and then take that to the Faculty Senate. It's their vote, ultimately, whether a recommendation goes from that body on to the senior administration and decisions eventually get made. We're not involved with making the decision of whether these recommendations get accepted in any way by anybody. We're also not involved with implementation, so that's the other piece, is we're not involved with saying, even if these things are accepted, when they would actually be implemented. So some of these things might not be put into place for a couple of years either. So this is where we were, and we started playing with things. What we discovered right away was you can't move one thing without moving five other things in the calendar. Everything depends on everything else. So it's really, if you think about it, it's an optimization program with lots of variables, essentially. And but what we did is we started working with things. Actually, fall calendar was easier to work with than the spring calendar, because things are pretty well locked in. We can't change Thanksgiving. I actually proposed at one point, sort of tongue-in-cheek, that we go to the Canadian system for Thanksgiving, because it actually falls at a better time in the semester for breaks and things like that. Thanksgiving is a disaster, pretty much, in terms of education, in terms of timing for people leaving campus and things like that. So we made some modifications. One of them was to get rid of a half day on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. That was one of the first things we looked at and said, it just doesn't make sense. Ultimately, we needed to do some other things, though, because one of the other constraints we do have is that any proposal we make has to fulfill the requirements of the New York State education system. So there's a certain minimum number of contact hours, I think it works out to be. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, but it's not days exactly, but it works out to days of instruction, and things work in different ways. The exams count, but study days don't count. There's some various oddball things that go in with that. Just as an anecdote, right off the bat, we looked at the Yale calendar, which was just being revised as we started our process here, and I looked at that and I said, this is fantastic. They're doing all kinds of good things. They've got all these wonderful things happening in the Yale calendar. I contacted the chair of the Yale calendar committee. He sent me his spreadsheets and things like that. But this is great. We're all done. It's going to be great. And then it turned out Yale doesn't have the same requirements for number of days of instruction as we do. We had to throw the whole thing out and start over. They can get by with fewer days than we can. So that's the kind of thing we were dealing with. So Thanksgiving was one thing that happened. We made some other modifications. During that discussion of the fall calendar, one of the things that came up was, what about the study and exam period? We have a very long period at Cornell now relative to peer institutions for the study period and exam period. It's stretched out over a very long period of time. We have heard anecdotally that there is some dissatisfaction that even among students about being sticking around campus for a long time, having exams late in the game before you go off to Christmas or to break for the summer, for that matter. And so we look at that, and it turns out that the programs, the algorithms by which the exam period is actually put together, had not been looked at in a long time, a very long time. And as is typically the case anywhere, but certainly here at Cornell, a number of sort of inconsistencies and odd sort of exceptions and things had crept into that calendar, that part of the calendar, over the years, and become kind of enshrined. So certain classes, for example, had at one point gotten permission to have exams sort of out of phase with their normal timing, and that had gotten locked in. They'd done it year after year after year. So a lot of things like that just hadn't been looked at in quite a long time. So what Kathy's group did, and maybe you want to say more about this, but what Kathy's group did is do some modeling of that and try some different algorithms for how exams are scheduled, how study period is scheduled. And what we managed to do is to condense that whole period and put a study break day in the middle of the period of the exam period to do what these algorithms allowed us to do with that, which was to minimize the number of bad events, which we defined as being cases where students have back-to-back-to-back exams, three exams on the same day, three exams in the 24-hour period, things like that where there's scheduling glitches, all that kind of stuff. And what we came up with was a condensed period that starts with some study days over a weekend and then starts the exam period, and then have a study day again on the Thursday of the exam period. And that condenses the whole thing, but we think, gives us the possibility of having a condensed period but still having students have time for their studying and everything. So if I had to choose the single biggest thing that this calendar does, I'd say that's the one that probably affects students the most. And it is with some trepidation that we do things to actually condense that study period if the goal is mental health of students. We're certainly sensitive to the fact that that could be a problem. We relied on our student representatives to give us feedback on that. We sent out last year the principles and objectives of the calendar. That was posted and sent out widely to people, disseminated very broadly, and we got some feedback on it. We didn't get a lot of feedback saying that there were particular problems with that aspect of it, however. And so we went on with our planning following this period of public comment on the calendar last year. And I think everybody should have gotten information in all the different constituencies, whether it was from the student assembly or the employee assembly or the GPSA. All those groups were contacted. Things went out on listserv announcing the calendar and all of that. And we took feedback through a mailbox that was run by Kathy. So we proceeded with that after that period of comment. The next big thing that happened for us was we played around with the commencement date, and there are lots of reasons for wanting to move commencement further up in the semester. One of them is just so people can get a start on their summer internships and jobs, faculty can get started on research and things like that. That was one of the goals, whether we could look into doing that kind of thing. We tried. That was really problematic in so many different ways, because given that we were now looking at possibilities of commencement on the Memorial Day weekend, the weekend before that, or the weekend before that, Ithaca College has its commencement in that time frame as well. And when you don't have an anchor point for the spring semester, it becomes really difficult. So many things get up for grabs. When you start the semester, does that interfere with winter sessions? If you start too early, people like me, for example, faculty who write grant proposals, many of the deadlines are in mid-January, and that becomes a real problem working on that. All kinds of different things happen. So eventually, we took our provisional fall calendar and also a question to the senior staff, so the president, the provost, and various other people, vice presidents, and asked them point blank two things. Do you approve four and less of what we're doing with the fall calendar? Again, with the minor, relatively minor things that we did there. And secondly, what about commencement? Should we stick with Memorial Day, or can we look at other times? Two things came back. The fall calendar was fine to them. They were okay with that. The second was stay with Memorial Day. So that set in train a whole another series of things that happened. Really three things after that. One of them is we're locked in a Memorial Day, so that puts us where we need to be for that end period of the semester. We also wanted to respect Martin Luther King Day as a holiday for the whole university. Okay? So we decided we would start classes at later commencement times. Let us start classes after Martin Luther King Day. We made sure that that would be the case every year. We've also recommended, by the way, that that be an employee holiday. So that's something that hasn't happened in the past, and that's another whole set of things that doesn't affect you folks quite as much. So that's the second piece of it. And the third piece is we've heard good feedback on that exam study period schedule, and we put that into place in the spring semester as well. So what that did was that gave us, actually Cassie and I were at the meeting with the senior staff. We walked out of there, we locked in on Memorial Day, and we said, look, we've got a week now that we can play with to give mental health breaks for students. What do we do with it? Our first thought, and we really thought that this is kind of a humorous story in a way, Cassie and I sat downstairs in Statler, and we said, wow, we've got it. We've got a week. We can put a whole week at President's Day. That period, everybody's going to love that. You're going to have that break, and you're going to have spring break. Breaks up the semester into thirds, roughly. And the other thing that I didn't talk about yet, one other constituency that was very anxious to have their calendar modified is all of the faculty members who have kids of school age. Because the Cornell calendar and the local school calendars are out of phase with each other in the sense that there are many holidays that the school calendar has for the local schools, but faculty have to work, they have to teach. So one of the things we were asking, can you do something to mitigate that problem? Well, we didn't make that one of our primary objectives, but when we saw that we had this extra week, one of the big problems is actually during President's Day week, when school systems are all completely off and faculty are working all week and have got to arrange daycare for their kids and all those kinds of things. So we thought we've got the perfect solution to all of our problems. We've got Memorial Day locked in, we've put a break at President's Day, and then we'll have the spring break as it was and center it in the rest of the semester. That breaks things up into thirds, we're all set. Well, okay, so we came back to the meeting and Natalie and Jeffrey just shot us down. They was like, no, we're not enthusiastic about that week at President's Day. Jeffrey, I think, said, my mother doesn't want to see me a week like that for a whole week at that point. We just got back from vacation. That's no good. So anyway, we heard that, and that was the reason why what we went to was a different plan, which has 2 days of President's Day, so the President's Day Monday and Tuesday, and uses two of the additional days, or the other 2 days, really, to add on to spring break, at the beginning of spring break. That plan came from hearing both undergraduate students and also graduate students tell us that it costs a lot more money to fly on Saturday than it does to fly on Thursday, which I think I know as well, and that we would really help people a lot by having the break start on that Thursday and add a couple of days and the weekend, frankly, to spring break. So that would also help, not so much with mental health in terms of another break, but we get the other break for a couple of days by having that during the President's Day week, and then again, center spring break with the extra 2 days in that other piece of the semester. So that's the genesis of all of these, many of these different pieces. You notice I haven't said anything more about senior week. And the reason is because the way that it worked out was not that we were trying to do anything particular with Senior Week, reduce it or anything else. Again, that was not one of our priorities by any means. But what happened was that the way the exam schedule was set up, it was the two study days were the Saturday and Sunday before exams start, with exams starting on Monday, then going through the following weekend and having the Monday and Tuesday after that. Right? So once you locked in commencement and worked backwards, what happened was you could either put that so that Senior Week was reduced by the 2 days, the first 2 days, the Monday and Tuesday, or you'd have to take the whole thing and move it way back another whole week if you wanted to keep that exam schedule the way it was. By doing that, you then eliminated the possibility of using mental health days because we'd eat up that part of the calendar, and that would give us back an extra long Senior Week. It would be a senior 12 days or something like that. I don't remember exactly. But there was a very long period with nothing happening on campus except whatever seniors were there. That didn't seem like a good thing for us to do either. So that's how we ended up with that. Now, one other piece to understand, though, is that we do recognize, and I have to say at this point that Natalie has been a very strong advocate for Senior Week ever since she first came on the committee. So we understand that there's a lot of programming that goes on. This reduction in Senior Week is by no means a statement by this committee that we feel that there's no value in Senior Week or that all seniors are drunk and disorderly and need to get rid of Senior Week or anything like that. There's none of that there at all. That's not what we're saying. But what we did do, and what Kathy managed to do, was by changing the way we assign exams, making it create an exam schedule. Instead of doing exam schedule by the day the class meets, the day and time the class meets, doing it instead by the actual schedules of actual students and balancing the numbers and everything so that it makes an optimal exam schedule. Another parameter that can be put into that model is whether or not you're a junior or senior or whatever. And by doing that, we believe that we can minimize the number of seniors who will have exams on that Monday and Tuesday of what was Senior Week, and now will be Senior 2 days at the end of the week plus the Saturday. And so basically what we're trying to do with this system is make it so that most seniors will actually have a Senior Week. It won't be the same Senior Week it is now. I've heard from various people that there may be some issues. In fact, we're hoping to get feedback on this. Maybe some issues with the scheduling of some of the programming for seniors if there are exams going on. I haven't heard this, but someone just told me this very recently. That could be a problem for that. But this is the kind of stuff we're looking at. So that's what happened with Senior Week. It was not a conscious decision to really do much about that at all. That's the overview. I think that covers most things. Anything, what have I forgotten? Anything that's major? Natalie and Jeffrey, what else do I need to say?
Yeah. Just one more point about the whole week of President's Week, and another reason why we kind of thought that it wouldn't be as beneficial to students is we understand the need for a break in February, especially with the dreariness, but we were concerned that if you take too long of a break, the people that have money to travel would travel for that week, and those that might be international students or unable to travel for some reason would be here in Ithaca with nothing to do, no programming or anything for an entire week, which we thought would counteract a lot of the mental health benefits that a shorter break would have. So that was pretty much the driving force behind
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's right. That was right. That was the other piece of that, and that was actually brought up, too, by the Associate Dean from Arts, David Spreeze, who's a member of the committee. So, you know, people are looking out for these issues and trying to optimize things as best we can. And it was sad to see our plan go down. We still got it. If you read the materials, it's still in there as one possibility people might do. Let me mention that one of the other considerations and one reason why that plan was also attractive was because one of the things that happens when you have pieces of weeks taken up with breaks is that the people who teach the large lab courses that have sections every day of the week, and have to set up labs. I'm a scientist myself, so I know what this is like. You have to set up the labs, then you can't do the lab that right way because some of your classes, some of your sections don't meet that week. So one of the big advantages is having that full week at the President's Day week, and then just the standard full week at spring break, is that would have no impact whatsoever on the lab sessions because they would all the breaks would be full week breaks, and there'd be no question about having some sections meeting and some sections not meeting. That was another thing that was quite attractive about it. So actually two or three things in favor of that as we walked into the room, and then we heard these negatives, and so we backed off on that and decided to do something different in the end.
before I open up this speaker list, Jeffrey, you've been integral in working with the committee and representing the graduate student voice. So would you like to add anything?
I mean, I guess it just, you know, they pretty much hit up all the changes. I'd just say most of the changes that we, almost all the changes that we made were made with a mental health focus. So I think that's the most important thing to understand is these weren't made because we think it's going to be the most fun or whatnot. It's because we think that the calendar that we're presenting today is going to really help with mental health on campus.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, there are some compromises made throughout the whole proposal, but that's what happens when you bring many different parties together. And overall, I think these are very beneficial changes for all undergraduate students, things that probably won't be implemented for the next couple of years just because it takes a while to get the changes started. But a lot of them, I know if I was an undergraduate there, I would very much be looking forward to, and I think that this definitely addresses a lot of the mental health needs that the professor said that may have been shirked due to the fact that the calendar hadn't been changed in such a long time. So with that, opening up the speakers list, first on the speakers list is Vice President of Finance, Nicoletti.
Well, you know, first I just want to say thank you guys for coming, and you know, I'm really happy having heard some of these changes over the last few weeks and hearing you guys talk about it now. I think from a mental health standpoint, a lot of these changes really address some of those issues, and you know, I'm happy with the great majority of what's going on here. I think first off, that half day during Thanksgiving was the most annoying thing in the world, so thank you guys for you know, kind of recommending to get rid of that. And in addition, having spring mirrored with you know, kind of like a fall break and a Thanksgiving structure, I think that's really good. I'm sure that all the students in their own probably just curious about senior week, because I think most people will agree largely with the other changes. You know, personally, I think that there's always been questions about the length of senior week, even though there's not really that much of a popular sentiment that exists with it. I think that if you have an algorithm that might work with respect to getting seniors out of their exams earlier, that would be something that would be interesting to engage in, and I'd be interested to see how an algorithm like that would work. There are public events, so they might be able to exist during the public part or the actual senior days versus the a la carte trips might be able to also begin during the exam period. I don't know how that would work. I guess my question is relevant to funding specifically. So we locked in place senior week funding for 2012-2014. But I see in your calendar you're recommending these changes for fall 13 to spring 14. I don't know what the dates might work out and basically how much notice we would get as to a finalized calendar so we can start working with senior week to reduce some of the funding that might be going to that program.
Sure. Shall I take that for starters?
The calendar is set actually 5 years in advance, and so when we implemented Labor Day, you know, it was clear as to how rapidly we implement that. We were able to implement it within 2 years. So when I think what we have on the web are examples of what it would look like if it was implemented. I think that it's very unlikely it'll be the full thing will be implemented within 2 years. So I think you can't take those dates as actually sort of cast in stone. The implementation is going to happen over time. And as I said, right now our calendar is set 5 years in advance.
The other thing that's relevant about that is the reason those dates are there, those number of years, is because among them they capture most of the contingencies about when things swing with different holidays and stuff. As you know, things shift around quite a bit, and so if you look at it, you'll see that, for example, in some years classes will start just 2 days after Martin Luther King Day on Wednesday. The other years they start actually a week later. And so we wanted to capture those contingencies there, those different settings of the calendar, so people would see that. And the dates themselves are less meaningful than just that that's a year when that happens and that's another year when something different happens. Okay? Great. There's nothing about that says it's going to be implemented in that year.
I don't know if you guys are going to be sticking with this for the next some odd years, but just for your guys' information, fall 2013 is basically when we'll need to make a decision about that sort of funding, so I'm sure that our successors will hopefully be in the loop with that and be, you know, asking Senior Week how they plan to adjust if these changes are made. So that will be a conversation that students will continue to have. But thank you so much. Appreciate it.
The calendar committee was meant to be a one-year proposition, and I'm already in my second year. I'm retiring after this. And I've had enough calendar for a long time. Yeah, it's good to do that, right.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Chopra.
Hi, thank you so much for coming. I guess I have a few questions or things I want to say. First, I do agree with Natalie and Jeff in that I think shorter breaks versus like an extra week are a lot better, so they're more interspersed. Just because I think a lot of us, when we get really stressed, we need like a week in the way or to catch up, and then we feel really revived versus spring break, which I know will probably die a little before then. As for my next section, I'm currently a junior and I'm on Senior Week Committee, so I have a bunch of questions about that. First of all, I guess the idea of making it so seniors will have that Senior Week, I think it's a really good idea. Especially the fact that there are a lot of undergraduates or underclassmen that are going to run these activities, and I think that this might, I guess, discourage underclassmen from joining and wanting to run these activities, because it might interfere with our schedule. So I was wondering, maybe I'm just confused, why you would either have to move the entire exam period back an entire week versus like a day or two. Can you explain that? I appreciate it.
Yeah, let me see if I can. I mean, it's almost easier if I had the calendar in front of me, but if you think about it, the way that we set it up, the exam schedule, we wanted to make sure that there were study days. Right, we're eliminating the study period as it exists now, but we want study days in there still, and that would be a weekend where we built that in. So that's a weekend that people can study before their first exam comes. So that means right there you have to start on the weekend for studying, and then exam period starting on Monday. That's how we did it. So maybe I'm missing something, but I think you either do that the week before commencement, or you move it back fully to the next week before that, and that, you know, so it's just like a moves as a block, and that's all I'm saying is that I think if you do that, then you end up with ending on, what would it be, you end up with, and your last exam is going to be on a Tuesday with Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and a week, and then commencement.
We also talked about ending classes not on a Friday, so could the last day of class would be a Wednesday or a Thursday, and we made a really conscious effort to end classes on a Friday. We felt that, you know, that was kind of clean to have five days in the last week. We also talked about slope day. You know, so what would happen if classes ended on a Wednesday? Would slope day be on a Wednesday afternoon? So we, you know, a little bit like everything you push, something else popped out. But Jeff is right. You can't. You know, we could shorten the exam period. That would give you a longer senior week, but shorter exam period. So. In the end, that was the proposal that we came up with.
So I might just add that also is still the large lab classes that are a significant constraint in this, because it's really difficult if you have a 5 day a week with 20 sections lab, and then if you have a partial week, that makes scheduling really difficult. So I think mainly for that reason, it's really, we wanted to keep as many full weeks as possible in the calendar.
And just to extend speaking time from the position of the student assembly who appropriates the funds for senior week, Adam has.
I mean, I don't know what will ultimately happen, but what I think is that if you have 3 days of official senior week, during the first two like non-senior exam days of still exam period, you'll probably have those pay-as-you-go senior events, which the student activity fee doesn't cover, and then those can extend into the three official days. Then you'll have three official days of programming. So it'll just be cutting out, I think, the official kind of public events that everyone can go to. Because obviously you can't really have student activity be funded events during exam period.
Could I make a point that's maybe relevant here, just to mention that it may be good for you folks to hear, that when we make these recommendations, we haven't looked into all those kinds of details. And that's across the board, not just with the senior week sort of thing, but a comparable situation is with move-in dates and orientation, where we've done a little consultation with the orientation staff, just to find out if it's absolutely a non-starter, if we do, you know, changing the way we do the move-in dates, for example, what could we do? If we suggest something, is it just not going to work at all? That's the only level we've gone through with that. And so we're figuring that, you know, this, again, is where we want feedback from people. People know that there's a problem like this that needs to be looked into. There are two ways we can deal with it. One is it's just an absolute fatal flaw in our program. That's one thing. But otherwise, we're assuming that people will work together to resolve these issues, given a mandate that classes will start on a certain day or end on a certain day, and work around it. We've done that with everybody, so it's not just the students and not just senior week where we said, you know, we haven't looked into details of things like the funding patterns and things like that. So I think it's worth treating to hear that.
And I would argue, before you go on to your second question, that that's also something that might want to be looked into with Travis Apgar and ISD Pam Helen and ELC. Hannah Geiser is our liaison for when classes start right after Martin Luther King Day, starting basically figuring out how Rush would work in that process is also a similar type of thing that needs to be figured out.
Yeah, there are a lot of moving parts to all these things. We will make the recommendations and then, again, get feedback. And if there are fatal flaws, yeah, that's one thing. If otherwise, we'll figure people will work out whatever they can for doing this. And everybody will adjust over a several-year period, which is one reason why implementation is not going to be instantaneous.
Right.
It can't be.
Can you have 20 more seconds left? There's some question, or are you
did I use her time? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. This is just to make sure that everyone gets their
yeah.
piece. So we're going to move on to Representative Kay.
Yeah. So to clarify, Betty, we did usually 4 days, correct? Or is it?
It has been 4.5 days. Exams start on Wednesday night, I think, right? So it's been Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then most of the day on Wednesday.
I love a lot of the changes. My only issue, I think, is adding a day to spring break and then taking it away from study week, because I think that, I know personally, I'd rather have the extra day to study before and have, like, maybe the Monday to study instead of having just the weekend and having one extra day to study. I think that would really help students more than having maybe an extra day of spring break. Especially after slow day, I feel like things would be a little crazy. There are going to be a lot of alumni back, and I just kind of think that we might need the time more.
So if it were spring, though, it wouldn't be the Monday that you would get, right? It would be probably have to move the other direction, otherwise you're cutting into senior week even more, right? So
right.
It had to go the other way, and we'd have to end, slip day would have to be on Thursday and, you know, or something, I don't know what, or Friday would be float day and a study day? I don't think so. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? So anyway, these are the kinds of things where, yeah, if I had to say the one thing I think I'm most worried about, most concerned about if we've done these things, is holding my breath just a little bit about this condensation of study and exam period. But if that, to me, is a place where really there is a legitimate concern that in the interest of reducing student stress in one place, we might be putting more stress on students in another place. If our system doesn't work the way we predict, we hope it would, right? With this study period and a day interspersed in the middle of exams and breaking up these bad events and things like that. That really, to me, we think it'll work. We wouldn't have proposed it if we didn't think so. But until it actually happens and we live through it, we won't actually know. Now, one thing to remember in all of this is that initially the students who experience the transition of going from a longer study, for example, a longer study period or a longer senior week to these shorter periods of time will notice the difference. But within 2 years, there will not be a cohort of students that even remembers what it was like before. So it's kind of, you know, we've got to make, if we're going to make a change, it's going to affect people, and people are going to feel a difference, and then it's going to be just the way Cornell does it, and people will never know the difference again. That's either good or bad. I mean, in measuring student stress in absolute terms, I don't have a metric for that, so I don't really know what we'll end up doing in a way.
Do you think that as long as, like, the faculty are on the same page, and because I know for a lot of my classes, I have papers, not just exams. So, like, if I have 2 days for papers plus to study,
right.
I know how well that would work out.
Right.
So I think that as long as faculty are on the same page, it's the administration, then I could see it working out very well, but and it takes a lot of cooperation.
Do you want to comment on that? Because we were just, actually, Cassie and I were just talking about this before we came in here, so you wanted to say
I'm not sure. We understand that, right, that those 3.5 or 4 days were work days for you to finish up the work for the class, those papers, and, you know, we acknowledge that you can't do that and study for exams all at the same time. So there does have to be some give and take with faculty not expecting papers to be due during the study period.
And that will be a process, too, of educating the faculty. I mean, Bill, I don't know if you want to mention the efforts that that you've made as dean of faculty to try to remind faculty and recommend that they do things, can't tell them necessarily that they can't do, I mean, can tell them
they
can't
do something. Whether they do it or not is another story.
Yeah, that's right.
So there are, yeah, there are complaints every semester about exams that are illegal or at illegal times or exercises are due at illegal times, and that's a constant reminding activity to the faculty.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the final exam schedule, because Jeff said we feel the schedule will be better, and I say we do a little more than feel. We did modeling on this, and so we built 6 or 7 different scenarios to minimize these things called bad events. And we were able to make a better schedule than the one we have now. And so that's why we feel that we can condense the period, we can offer this study period in the middle of the week, and still come up with a better schedule. And some of the reason we can do that is because we want to build a schedule based on your actual enrollment. And this is one thing, not changing the schedule, but building better schedules is something we can do right away. So while we may not change the way the exams are structured over the course of a week and a half, there are some things we can start doing right away, so it is building better schedules, lessening those bad events.
There is a group of faculty who really want to have a better exam schedule. It's not just the students, but some faculty have had the last exam on the last day for the last 6 semesters, and they're sort of tired of it. The students get that, you know, once a year, but there are some faculty who really are upset with the current.
One of them was on our committee.
One was on our committee.
Yeah, she was.
All right, is there anyone else? Oh, okay. Representative Mueller, future executive vice president for the next year.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks.
The only thing I wanted to ask was, you said that some seniors might still end up with exams. And, you know, I of course, you're in this tough position where it's really tough to make that choice, but I would feel really bad if that some figure were close to 40 or 50%
right.
And
right.
Not like 1 or 2 or 3%. And I was kind of curious where that fits in, maybe for university administration to answer that question.
What we will do is minimize the chance of seniors having exams on that Monday or Tuesday. We can't completely guarantee it. And to be honest with you right now, I'm not positive how we're going to do that. We know in the scheduling algorithm we have 10 or 12 variables that we can push and shove and figure out how it works. And so if we say one of the things that we really greatly want to minimize are seniors, that's just one of the other variables. And so some of it is looking at all these different things, and that then becomes one of the bad events, seniors having exams on Monday and Tuesday. I can't promise you it will be 1 or 2%. I would be horrified if it was 40 or 50 or even 25%. But until we actually build that particular model, I can't really answer it, but I hear you.
I mean, if seniors are taking classes mainly populated by freshmen or something like that, I mean, it's, you know, it's probably likely that some of those seniors are going to end up with exams on those days. I mean, it's likely to happen.
I think that's a conversation that needs to be, if that's the case, then that's one of those things that we should kind of keep on our slate to remind students of and also communicate with faculty about. Because, you know, if there is a case where you have a student trying to catch up on something that he missed, you know, the senior in his second semester freshman writing seminar, that needs to do something.
That may encourage you to take first year writing seminar
exactly.
In your first year.
You know, that's the sort of thing we can get. If we have communication with students and with the faculty about it, then hopefully there's a mutual agreement about it.
What we don't want to do is just offer the exams, you know, 4,000 level, 3,000 right. level, 2,001. We thought about that. We thought, oh, that'll be just really easy. But that's not the best use. But it will likely wind up like that. I think that there could be, you know, 1,000 level classes offered.
There would be a strong correlation,
yeah.
probably, right?
Yeah.
But not the intent to do it then.
So just to add on to that,
also working with student services would be great, because I know as a student advisor in the ILR school, and that would be a great, and I know a lot of schools have that, so that would be a great way also to transmit that.
We've been very actively engaged with college registrars and college associate deans throughout this process too, and that's a good point.
Also, the vetting process includes the university assembly, the graduate students, the undergraduate students, and the faculty. So the vetting process really includes the whole constituency, and student and academic services was represented on our committee, and certainly they are aware of what we're recommending.
Next on the speakers list is Vice President of Public Relations, Gurjani.
Thanks for coming in. I think we have the same concern in that exam week shortened. And then as I understand it, the exam schedule will be figured out 3 or 4 weeks in every semester to try to optimize it for everyone. So is there any concern that in the years to come, you could have more bad events than you would with our current schedule? Because we don't really know until we get to that year when you set the schedule.
Well, sure. I mean, we could always get to a place where we were creating more bad events. And I think we'd actually gotten there by not looking at the scheduling algorithm for about 20 years. We're actually going to use a different software package to build the schedules. So I think we'll have more flexibility in maybe each semester. It gets tweaked just a little bit, to make fewer bad events. You're right. We may get to a point where enrollment trends are so different that 10 years from now, we build a really bad schedule. But I think we're going to be more nimble in being able to build a better schedule.
So I can't think about it every day.
Next on the speaker list is Parliamentarian
Angela. I haven't said that yet. Yes, thanks for coming. I kind of have a question with the exam period. It seems that by adding in the extra day in the middle, that it kind of shortens up from 7-day period down to kind of a 6-day period. Is there any plans to extending that into like the weekends, or or does it make it any constraints on having, because you have to have the same number of tests in a shorter number of days?
There's a really big change, and that is to have exams on Saturday and Sunday. So one exam on Saturday, one exam on Sunday. Right now, the Saturday exams are primarily the language exams. But the idea is they would not be restricted to languages for Saturday or Sunday. So, that's a big change.
We also have something, and Jeff mentioned it, called these exception periods during the final exam week. And you guys probably don't realize it, but there are some exams that have gotten approval to be held in these exception periods. And we're using those periods very inefficiently. And so we can reduce the number of exception periods and still, build the schedule. So that's how we got to the point where we realized we didn't really need, whatever we have now, 8 days for exams, but we could shorten it to whatever it is, 6.5 or so.
So I might just add also, I think that Cornell has the longest period of exam and study period of any of our peers. We're the longest. Everybody else can do it in a shorter period of time. It seems like we ought to be bright enough to figure out how to do it.
One of the things actually in the Yale calendar that I was alluding to earlier, they had actually just reduced their study period down. I'm not even sure they have one now. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I looked at that. But that was one of the first things we saw, that other institutions, peer institutions, were doing fine or were proposing to not have those at all. I can't say they're doing fine, because that means they just changed the calendar. But we thought, if it's possible for other places, it is for us as well.
All right, that's the end of the first speaker's list. Is anyone that hasn't spoken yet that would like to ask a question, make a comment? Representative Brown.
Hi, thank you guys for coming. I just wanted to question how you were going to go about measuring the benefits and the increase in student health from the schedule, because it seems like a lot of the changes end result could feasibly increase student health, but how will you measure that with all the other changes that could come annually?
That's a really good question.
It is an excellent question, and it actually gets to the question that was asked at the assembly's breakfast in a different way. And that is, we're tinkering with things and hoping to make some inroads into a problem, but we're not addressing the root causes of the problem. And what are we doing about that? That was asked by, I forget by who it was at the breakfast. Randy, was it Randy Wade? funny Randy Wayne from my same department anyway. But anyhow, so, but it was brought up by somebody or mentioned before by somebody else too. And our response was we're not. I mean, we really, you know, we're, again, going back to the way this all got started was, can we do things that look obvious in the calendar that might have a beneficial result? And one of the ways, the obvious, most obvious thing was, we've got these long periods of instruction in a bad time of the year. Can we break them up? So actually where we started, the simplest thing we figured we would be able to do would be to just center the breaks we had in those long blocks, make sure spring break fell smack in the middle of the period of time with no breaks, and move fall break also between centered between Thanksgiving and the start of the semester, Labor Day or something like that. But I don't have an answer for you because I don't think there's any metric we really could use. I mean, one measure is just what started this whole thing were the suicides. And those are episodic events. I mean, I think thank God, they're few enough that you can't really necessarily know why any particular student did that. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that. I think it's just kind of guessing and talking to people and hoping that what we do does have a positive effect.
Can I just add to that? In that we were going to have a group look at the calendar regardless of the suicides. The fact that suicides happened was really, you know, terrible, but also stimulated this process. I think maybe us all take it a little more seriously. But you know, I've had lots of conversations with people about what a terrible calendar that Cornell has. And you know, took it in two parts. First of all, implemented Labor Day as a university holiday, and I had committed to forming a calendar committee prior to the spring of 2010. So that was going to happen anyway. But this is a lot of reasons to look at the calendar.
No, I wouldn't have chaired it though.
Is that right?
No. I mean, I knew nothing about a calendar committee. The only thing that got me to do it was this issue with student mental health. I mean, really. I've been living with a calendar for 28 years here, and I'm okay with it. It really doesn't matter to me much. But the issue of the suicide certainly got my attention.
So we're going on to the second speaker's list, Representative Chopra.
I'm back. First of all, I was wondering how Jen Davis felt, I guess, about the repercussions of senior week. She had that senior week.
I don't know Jen Davis.
From our calendar committee, who was representing Dean of Students was Dean Hubble.
Okay.
And from his perceptions of the entire calendar, I don't think he's here today. He's our advisor. From our perceptions, he approved it. So technically, the Dean of Students office approved these changes.
Okay. And next question, I guess maybe John could answer on this. What would be the problem with having slope day on that Thursday? I mean, from my point of view, I think.
I don't think there is a problem. You're a faculty.
Maybe you think there's a problem.
Yeah. So again, you know, shortening and having partial weeks is a problem. And I think that's a very significant issue for faculty. And as I said, it's primarily for those classes which have many sections and live classes, which are really difficult to adjust.
Can I just comment on that? Just one thing. If I had to predict where we're going to get almost the most pushback on our calendar plan, it's going to come from the people teaching physics and chemistry labs. And we've heard, when we made an effort, actually, I said we haven't really reached out that much to people individually, but we did have one of the members of our committee, Lois Pollock, who's applied in engineering physics, go talk to the chemists and physicists informally just to find out whether this was just an absolute non-starter. And interestingly, she found that the proposed spring calendar, at least for chemistry, isn't going to be a huge problem for a couple of different reasons, but we still haven't heard the end of this yet. And like I say, I mean, I think that could be as much a deal breaker as pretty much anything for this calendar, because it really is a big issue for faculty.
Oh, yeah, I completely understand. I wonder how that same issue is dealt with in the fall semester, like for Thanksgiving.
So that was our argument. If you can deal with it in the fall, you'll be able to deal with it in the spring.
Yep. Because the two, as someone pointed out, the two calendars are very parallel if we come up with this proposal.
Yeah.
the breaks almost mirror one another.
I think the issue will be spring is obviously it affects different classes. Mm-hmm. And so the faculty and the TAs who are teaching those classes will have to adjust. But Bill's right. We said, well, you can do it in the fall. So we're really mirroring spring to look like fall. So we feel like it probably can work.
Well, whether that argument will carry any water with those folks is remains to be seen, I think.
Okay, great.
Does
anyone else want to be on the second period list? All right, seeing none, I'd just like to thank you three for coming to speak to us. Sending out a message to all undergraduate students, I believe, right now, and it has all the changes that I sent you that basically summarize all the changes, along with a link to the faculty senate calendar and hopefully a link to the email address. Yeah, so it's, yeah.
Please, oh, that email just comes to me.
Okay.
And I would prefer that if it's, and I would love to answer all of them, but I just have this theater. I've got 20,000 emails.
I think that
if you can take the email address out of the message.
Cool.
Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah,
and because the email address is on the Dean of the Faculty website.
Okay. It was just embedded in there, so we wanted to take it out. So it would be easier to send recommendations for students.
I'll just forward everything to you.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Actually, the model that we have, and we discussed this with at the committee, was we have representation from all the different groups on the committee, and so we have envisioned those people being the conduits from each of those assemblies being the conduits of information back to the committee. So that's why we're saying
that would be
the same thing.
Yeah, that would be great. And I think even if we can't take it off in time, as long as we can get all that information.
It's already gone out. No. Okay.
But if we can get, just in case it hasn't, if you can just collect all of that and just start it in a specific folder so you don't even have to read it, and then we can go through them together through the calendar committee and come up with responses to those, I think it would be even more beneficial just so you get the responses from all undergraduates like you were trying to get.
Okay. Also, I just want to remind you about that. I'm sorry I didn't see you did send it over. Thank you very much.
But thank you so much. So let us know if there's anything else you need to know about.
So we're excused.
You're excused. Thank you. I hope it wasn't that serious. All right. A round of applause. All right. Next, we're going to move on to the approval of the February 23rd and the March 1st meeting minutes. So we'll go one at a time. So first we're going to go through the February 23rd meeting minutes. Does anyone have any motions on the table?
Motion to approve.
All right, so there's a motion to approve. There's multiple seconds. Is there any dissent? There's a call for proclamation, and seeing no dissent, second. The approval of the February 23rd meeting minutes has been approved. Please take your seats if you're not going to the bathroom. Next, the March 1st, 2016 meeting. Is there any motions on the table?
Motion approved.
All right. Is there any second? You can't approve.
Second. Okay. Motion.
Is there any dissent? Okay. There's been a call for activation. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to pass the March 1st, 2012 meeting. All right. Moving on to the microphone. Is there anyone in the audience that is not on the agenda that would like to address the student assembly? You're on the announcement.
I just want to say thank you for coming.
Oh, okay. But we'll put that in the notes. All right. First announcement is the elections announcement by Director of Elections, Robert.
All right. Hey, guys. So elections went very smoothly. Congratulations to those of you guys in the audience and on the assembly who were elected. I'm just going to go quickly through the names of the people that were elected for each position. So for our new CALS rep will be Jill Marshall and Sarah Ballack. So congratulations.
Yeah, we'll yeah.
I'm really happy for all you
guys. AAP rep is Ulysses Smith. Art Sciences is Don Muir, Mo Sho, and Melissa Lukashevitz. Engineering is Thomas Kittinger and Avi Meller. The EVP is John Mueller. Hotel Administration is Stephen Breeden. ILR is Ross Gitlin. International liaison is Enrico Bonatti. The LGBTQ rep is Dean Iwako. Iwako. Minority liaison are Cameron Pritchett and Marlene Desai. The president is Adam Gitlin.
Oh.
Undesignated charge is Jay Lee, Jeffrey Box, Peter Scalfo, and Nisha Cobra.
Chopra.
Issue is Narda Torona. And that's it. So, you know, thanks for a really successful election. We had, I think, over 5,000 people voted. 425 people voted, which is like a record number. So,
thanks, Seth.
Just to add on to that, I was going through some old articles from the Daily Sun from just 5 years ago, they were 22 people running for 19 spots, which means there were only two contested races, and under 3,000 people voted.
16% voter turnout.
And it was a 16, now like and now it's 41-42. So it's really like you guys, which and Adam Rabrit.
No, Rabrit.
Yeah, me.
I
just want to say, like, as someone who was not on elections committee or not involved with like marketing it, everyone that I talked to from like the multicultural community or just the community in general had like amazing things to say about Nate reaching out to them and how that like motivated their members to get involved and actually learn about the candidates. So I guess just like
Okay, moving on to the next announcement, Anisha Chopra and Ross Gitlin, Gorge Safety.
Let's go.
We're the gang coming up for
our
video on Monday.
And we will have another in 2 weeks with progress.
When are auditions?
Okay. Next on the agenda is Ross Gitlin with a garbage can sound.
This is a very important issue. I don't know. He did. So I don't know. So I mean, if he made an answer, we're meeting with Spring Buff on Monday. About one Nicoletti's idea to put student assembly stickers on it. We're hoping that that will go through. But also, we're having the proposed things have three different garbage cans and recycling bins, and now they are a tag team next to each other on North Campus. And I really don't think I need to go into much more detail.
Okay, next announcement is Cal's announcement.
So last Friday, Greg and I met with Dean Borg, and it was actually a really successful meeting. We talked to her about the suggestions that we got at our outreach event, and it actually sounds like a lot of them are possibilities that can happen over the next couple of years, and very exciting, and I will let you know more details.
Next is Nature Tyson with an outreach update.
I just wanted to remind everyone that now that our elections are over, you're allowed to continue doing outreach events. So I've encouraged that, as well as going to your three mandatory outreach events as well. And be sure to be recording those on the outreach tracker, which I sent out again today. Thank you. You only have like a month and a half left.
And he sounds angry. So, you guys.
There's only been three responses.
There is. Wrong. All right.
Attendance.
All right. Attendance announcement by Vice President of Internal Operations, Ralph.
So attendance today wasn't bad, but I just cleaned up the sheet a little bit, and I emailed a few of you, but I don't want to, I'll email you privately because I don't want to, you know, call you out in the meeting, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people who have 4 or more absences, and unexcused or excused is still an absence, and if you get the 6, then it is my role as Vice President of Internal Operations. Remove you from the assembly, and I would much rather not do that. You know, it's March, we only have 7 meetings left. So I'll email you privately, and if you have any questions about attendance, contact me.
So please make it to these meetings on time. You should be here at 4:45. We start at 4:45. And don't get stopped throughout the whole week. It's not worth it. You've been great at that event so far. We have a lot of cool social events coming up, which we'd love for you to attend, especially at home. All right, we're going to move on to the business of the day. First is Resolution 39. Oh. Actually, okay, so first is going to be a report by the Appropriations Committee on the Everyone Campaign by Vice President.
So really briefly, the Appropriations Committee approved the special project funding request to the Everyone Campaign of $400 on Monday. The Everyone Campaign is a student-led advocacy and awareness campaign to draw attention in an approachable manner to sexual assault and other forms of non-consensual sexual activity on campus. The Appropriations Committee felt that this aligned very nicely with our safety and health focuses that we've been having for the last year. Other organizations that are funding this include Haven, Hillel, and WRC, and we are going to be funding marketing expenditures for this campaign to gain more awareness on campus and start a more approachable and open dialogue about sexual assault and harassment on campus. So the structure for how we hear special projects is the Appropriations Committee approved it. If this assembly decides that it wants to veto this expenditure, it can vote to do so by a two-thirds vote. Otherwise, if no one moves to do that, then we move on to these expenditures.
All right. Are there any motions on the table?
Anyone have questions?
Sorry, I know I'm in the Appropriations Committee, but just about future funding, are they going to be seeking the special project funding in the future, and how do we intend on financing in future years?
There are no plans currently for them to come back to us for special projects funding. We asked them that, and we have no requirements to fund them in the future.
Okay.
I was wondering how much money we have for special projects, just in general, like what's our budget looking like right now?
$2,500.
All right, so we don't need to vote on it. So we're just going to approve the expenditure for the Everyone
Campaign. Thank you.
All right, moving on to Resolution 39, Charter for the Umbrella Programming Fund. Representative Nicoletti, Representative Sy, and Executive Vice President.
So we presented Resolution 39 last week, and we discussed the new Umbrella Programming Fund structure that is going to be in place for ensuring that Umbrella organizations get this seed funding right from the start of the year to ensure intra-cultural programming and allow Alana to share in its mission of unifying communities of culture. Communities of color, excuse me. So, I don't think we really need to go through the document again. If people have questions, unless you guys want to speak on
it. I guess the only thing we can say, I don't know if it was attached to this, but the amendment that I think Representative Goldberg asked for was included. Is that reflected in here?
That's it, you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know
if it was updated in here, but the line was added. So, in... There's a one line under Article 2 that explicitly says that groups that receive UPF funding are not eligible for UPFC funding, and that's been approved by those groups.
Can you find the exact
wording
right now and add that in? All right. While you're doing that, I'm going to open up discussion. Is there anyone that would like to speak on this issue? Representative Mueller?
Forgive me if you need to sort of catch me up for part of this, but my question, I guess, is sort of in the case that a one of these groups finds that the funding is not adequate as by their own definition of that, whether it's just that they are not getting as much upfront as they usually do and they have to go off elsewhere to get grants and things like that. You know, should a group want to withdraw from the UPF, what would happen? What is the procedure there? Can they do that? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I guess to address the first part of your question, the UPF will not only offer them what they currently get from Alana and the SASD, but more on top of that. So hopefully the incentives are that they remain in the UPF. But if one of these umbrella organizations does not want to receive direct funding from the UPF, they are welcome to withdraw and not receive those funds and just receive Alana and SASD like they used to. They would be, you know, taken out of this charter. But I don't see that to be an eventual reality. I don't know if you guys.
I just don't see that as being like a very tangible reality. Like we went over the numbers last week, and you know, I just don't see there being any way that a group could get more money through SAFC and Alana than they would be getting through the UPF.
Next on the speaker's list is Vice President of Public Relations
for Vermont. So first, just a comment about something not related to this and a good question. From a PR perspective, just remember that everything you say in this room is on record and can be quoted. So just remember that. And the next thing is two questions. One, is the SAFC okay with, does the SAFC know about the rule that these four, like, member organizations under the umbrella can't get funding? Has that been communicated to them, and is it going to go in their rules or whatever?
I guess, why would that be an issue for the SAFC?
Because, I mean, like, you and I both know that if there's any loophole and you need the money, you'll do it. So if, and I'm not accusing anyone, but if, say, 5 years down the line, someone said, okay, I get UPF, but I can also buy SAFC.
So, like, you wouldn't be able to process through the system, so the way it works is when you register with... We would change their status on the SAO website from being SAFC to basically, like, quote-unquote, filing funded. It's the same way McFadden is.
Perfect. And then the next question, a bit more complicated. So... I understand that the UPF definitely helps, say, for example, cash to put on Asia Night because they don't have to scour the world for funding. But say an organization under one of these umbrellas, I would say they still have, you know, potentially the same, the same set of obstacles. They have to go to SAFC, go to other departments, you know, still apply to cash to, still probably apply to Alana. So, how does this help them? And B, you know, does this just in a way maybe guarantee them more money for their programs when they don't necessarily get it, you know? So everyone wants to grow their programs, and it's like,
yeah,
if I would have $10,000 for an event, even if I didn't use it, I would say, okay, I mean, it's just it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess on that very last note on like what will be considered towards the allocation, that's a decision that the umbrella organizations themselves are deciding upon, and we're only facilitating that conversation. I do know that the concept of including growth projections has been thrown around. I don't know if it'll be included in the final proposal or not. I guess taking a step back and looking at the cultural programming organizations under the umbrella orgs, at the end of the day, the UPF, the way it helps them is it makes it so that BSU, CAPSU, LAL, and NASAC don't have to spend their time going through Alana and going through the SAFC. Like, they show up at the beginning of the semester with a chunk of money, and they can get right to actually like facilitating, organizing, and handling logistics. Like when, you bring up Asian Fest, yeah.
Okay, next on the speaker's list is Representative Breeden.
Oh, sorry, really quickly, do you want me to read the amendment?
Oh yes, that'd be great.
So it is under Article 2. It starts after the word operations in the second line from the top. Second line from the bottom. So current programming operations period, and then the sentence is inserted. As a result of the funding provided by the UPF, the aforementioned umbrella organizations will no longer be eligible to receive funding via the Student Assembly Finance Commission. And this has already been approved by the UPF committee and by definition Alana as well.
Great. Can you send that to Chelsea?
Sure.
Okay. goes under Article 2, Purpose, after the sustained portion of their current programming operation. As a result, funded by the EPS, the aforementioned groups will no longer be eligible to apply for funds by the Student Activity Finance Commission.
Student Assembly.
Student Assembly.
Yeah. And just to follow up just very briefly on Mohit's comment, while the other organizations that are non-umbrella won't be getting direct funding, I think that strong umbrella groups to partner with them to put on events is going to rise all kind of all the votes. Yep.
Oh, okay. Representative
Freeman. Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering about like the process in which you guys kind of created this charter with the UPF, and I'm wondering if you guys do you guys have a sense of like the approval of the core developers and a lot of this charter and like their involvement and the membership. Is everyone okay, I guess, with having two members, two voting members on the committee?
So let's have Sasha answer that, since she's on the committee and here.
The answer is yes. We decided in two meetings ago that we all would have two representatives, whether that be whoever is most interested in the organization, the vice president, permanent, both presidents, or the president and the treasurer. There will be people voting, and we thought that that was most fair and most equal. Yes.
Okay. Next on the speaker's list is a representative from Cisco.
I guess what happens is on Asian night, I was just talking to someone at the ESU, and we were kind of surprised and slightly shocked when someone kind of like wondered why ESU was representing itself at Asian night. And I guess that kind of just brought up the kind of thing I've been wondering about, you know, how are these organizations working to have more like cross-cultural connectivity in the sense that not just for these big programs like Asian Night, but for like something small where they usually don't get a lot of people, but maybe other cultures can come in, or other groups that are outside of their, I guess, culture come and represent and just show their support in some way. So that way we show that this diversity isn't just about their specific culture, but just across the board.
Okay, Sasha, to answer that again, if you're okay with that, and then I add on a little bit.
Yeah, so how that happens, and we've been collaborating a lot more in the past year. ESU is at Asian Night because the CAPSU e-board member reached out to us and invited us to go. So a lot of that has been happening, and that hopefully will continue.
And I think there's a greater push on a university administration level. With the creation of 626, with Dr. Renee Alexander's position and all the initiatives that are coming out of her organization to foster the inter and intercultural sort of programming on every level. And it's sort of the same reason why, you know, the essay was also there, because we want to have, you know, we want to be engaged in these, you know, activities with various communities as well.
I hate to get really like constitutionally or parliamentarian on you, but like I think they are taking like the preamble and the purpose very seriously, and if you see in the preamble like it's a commitment and sustainability of student led programming aimed at both highlighting the diversity and unifying the various cultures, and that's something we are incorporating when we look at what type of sustainability and what type of growth in programming are we looking at.
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Brown.
Sorry, is that in it? Just the here, or did you just state it?
I just stated it.
Did you repeat it?
That was passed through the UPF committee. I think it was just wasn't included in the original charter.
As a result, funded by the UPF, the aforementioned groups will no longer be enabled to receive funds by the SAFC. And this is something that the entire UPF committee voted on. Again, we are just the people bringing this back to the FA. We are unbiased chairs. We help facilitate the conversation, but all of this is decided by the heads of all of these umbrella organizations. So this is what they would like to see, not us. But of course, we're happy with it. So.
And yeah, out of procedure level, us voting on a charter like this is the same as us voting on the charter of class councils, you know, a week ago, or sub, which we're about to do in 5 or 10 minutes. It's a lot more of a procedural vote. We didn't have a vote at that meeting, and this is more just the procedure, how the student activity fee works.
And going off that, we haven't really had that much experience yet, besides class councils, and we're about to have it with sub about how we reapprove charters. But it's basically left to the group that wants their charter reaffirmed, that they know what's best for their organization, and we pass it through. One of the guiding principles of the essay from the past few years that we made explicit this year is we're not an organization that tells another organization how they are running their own charter or their own organization. They come for us as help or for consultation. Of course, we're willing to help and give our 2 cents, but we're here to merely pass what this organization feels is best for them. The UPF and the UPF charter is a reflection of that.
Yeah. I guess just like piggybacking off that very, very quickly, like what this clause is intended for that Natalie's talking about for approving charters, is if like a byline-funded organization decided to cut all students out of the programming or operational aspects of their charter and wanted to have it all be administratively run, they would have to approve that through us, and you know, we would obviously frown against that and work with them. So that's why we do this for byline-funded organizations.
Yep.
Next on the speakers list is Representative Mueller.
This is going to sound really nitpicky, but I'm just trying to make sure you guys don't miss anything.
Sure.
There are 10 voting members, and there are 2 non-voting members. By Robert's Rules of Order, if you have a tie, the chair is supposed to break the vote. So what happens if we have all 5 members tied up against 5 members? Who breaks that vote, and then what happens in that case?
So we talked about this.
Okay, so I guess there's a theoretical, it was because there's 5 basically organizations, right? But you're right. I mean, that is like a procedural, that is a procedural thing where if one organization splits, so let's say like Sasha and Kareem are representing BSU and they disagree, you could have a deadline.
If possible, okay, you'll throw my time to Evan Quick.
I'm happy to chip in on this one. If you have, like, say, for instance, if you have 5 and 5, the vote loses. You need to have, under Robert's rules, you need to have more yeses than noes. So 5 to 5 fail. What Robert's rules said is that the chair normally doesn't vote, but may choose to vote in a situation where a tie arises. So if it was 5 and 5, the chair could choose to vote and make it 6 to 5 and have it pass, or choose not to vote, have it be 5 to 5 and have it fail. So basically, that's a long way of saying this isn't.
And to help the chair, there's a facilitator. In terms of a tie, I think that is, we would default to that explanation. Our resident unions are libertarian.
I was, by the way, in favor of instituting Canadian Thanksgiving.
So, yeah, so those are being taken care of. But once again, the UPF committee had come to the consensus that even with 2 voting members, as a community, you vote together. So technically, there are 5 voting members, but multiplied so everyone has a voice and there's more of an impact within each community.
Wait, Natalie, how it becomes 5?
How
it becomes 5?
What?
So I thought only 2 people could vote. Where did you get 3 to make a 5?
The Alana?
Yeah.
LAL?
Oh, I see 5. Tattoo? Nathan?
5. Alright. Any other people on the first speaker list? Okay, second speaker's list, Representative Breeden. Representative Lee.
Do you think two people from one each organization is good enough to represent the whole community?
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason we went with 2 instead of like
3,
theoretically like 1 should be fine, because you're like that umbrella organization is representing the views of the community. The reason we put 2 is so that each organization would kind of have an internal check within them. Like if, you know, the entire executive board thought one thing and the president decided to go against that, then there would be a second voice there to kind of counteract that. But so far, I very, very I see it very unlikely that there would ever be a time when the two people from a single organization would defer from each other.
They'd be caucusing beforehand, so. Yeah.
I see.
But I'm just going to stop discussion and again just reiterate the fact that many of these people that will be in this room next year, and if the UPS decides to change part of their charter, it really should be something that the UPS decides, and it's not our job to nitpick this. This should have been passed, honestly, last week. There shouldn't be this much discussion about this, because this is coming from an organization that understands what they best need to run, and it's an approval process that, unless there's something really contentious about the decision, should pass right through. The UPS organization understands it that way. Organizations like subs, class councils, convocation, EMS, float day, all understand it that way. I think it's an unfair opportunity that just because this is new that it has to be gone into so much depth when it's been approved by all of the members in the community and approved by their communities.
Call to question.
Okay, there's been a call to question.
I think that it is very exciting.
Yeah. All right, is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to vote by placard. All those in favor of the
policy
number 39, charter for the umbrella program, respond to Okay, and there's a proxy. Yeah. So 21. All right, all those opposed, please raise your placards. And all those that abstain. All right, so I vote 21-0 for Resolution 39 passes. All right, next on business of the day, Willis Street Hall is
Hi. Hey guys.
Hi Mike, can you tell yourself and state your name and year for the record?
Sure. I'm Michael Motley, class 2012, executive director of SUB, and I'm here to get past our bylaws, which we've been working on for the past several years. It was kind of incomplete when I first came into office, so I decided to polish it off with sort of some repetitions, contingencies, and obviously certain additions, such as the introduction of the PUB committee as a subcommittee of SUB, several position changes, nothing really major. So I'm hoping, based on Natalie's words prior, that we can kind of get this passed through relatively quickly. But I'm open for questions if anyone has any.
Can you just go over the biggest changes?
Sure. Section 2, Operations Mission Statement, basically it's clarifying what Willis Street Hall building policy applies to. This is pretty much already in practice. We already have organizations coming to us asking for permission for use of the entire Hope Plaza, as well as other spaces that are outlined in there. Membership, really no changes. Usually just wording changes due to the switch from the front desk to the resource center. There's a conflict of interest clause preventing those members who are part of other organizations from voting for said events. We reformatted nominations and elections. Originally, we had used, I think, the 2012 class council position to see if they had already changed theirs. We changed ours as well. Let's see, added a non-discrimination clause as per the Appendix B guidelines. And we added the PUB committee to the structure, and that has already been passed by the PUB committee prior. It was just not approved through our charter.
Great.
Great. Thanks. I think that, like Natalie said, I think most of this is pretty standard. I just did want to talk a little bit about the pub committee because I think that's something that the essay has really taken on.
Sure.
One of the questions I had was what you see the structure of the pub committee being, because right now it's a committee under sub, but you know, I guess A, like, do you ever think the pub committee will be a separate organization? And, you know, more specific to that, like in looking, for instance, at the pub director, it's under this, it would be someone
who would be the
special projects director. So I guess I was just wondering, you know, from a personal feeling, I feel like the pub director should just be someone elected from the pub rather than just the student union board. So I guess I was just wondering if you guys had considered that.
Well, on one hand, definitely you want someone who's just greatly involved in the pub, but...
And can you also just say what page the pub...
Oh, this is page 6 of operating procedures.
Great.
Obviously the...
Page 6, standing committee, section 1, pub committee. Sorry to interrupt.
If you just repeat the questions just so I can... through my head again.
Yeah. I mean, the basic question was just that the director of the pub is going to be the Willard Strait Hall Special Projects Director, who is elected from members of the Student Union Board, rather than someone who's elected by the pub committee. And I was just wondering why that was.
So from the start, it was agreed between previous student assemblies and subs that because the pub is in the Bear's Den in the Ivy Room, ultimately, the Student Union Board would have an overarching overseeing of the organization, as sub is responsible for facilitation of programming basically throughout Willard Strait Hall. And basically having a separate pub committee, while that, I mean, it's focused on a specific aspect, we also have several other subcommittees that are based on aspects that are actually within the student union, including the art club and several organizations. So this is basically one of them. We could potentially see it coming to a life of its own, but I mean, at this point, it's still getting off the ground, and so it'll probably need a larger overseeing organization to make sure. As for the choosing of the special products director from the subcommittee, we believe that the pub director, because he's not a general voting member, we feel that he would likely be part of the Student Union Board, Executive Board, simply as overseeing that the mission of the Student Union is also respected, as is the mission of the pub committee.
All right, next on the speaker list is Representative
Mueller. Hey, Mike, how are you? Just wanted to point out, and this is just for being nitpicky again.
All right.
And Hannah can probably confirm this, but I think analytic is one word, intra-fraternity and inter-fraternity. That's all.
Yes.
Intra-fraternity is one word. And
that's all inter.
Inter.
All right, can you say what
page?
Okay, so that's...
That is also same page. Page 6 of operating procedures, part 3, section 1, subsection 2, E8.
Yeah, that's all.
All right. And Penhel was one word. Gotcha.
All right. Is there anyone else on the first feature list?
Call to question.
All right. Is there a call to question? Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to vote by placard. All those that approve the Willard Strait Hall Committee Board bylaw changes, please raise your placard. All right, next on the speaker list is All those that abstain? All right, by a vote of 20 to 1 to 0, the essay resolution 40, the Willard Strait Hall Student Union Board of Change, and it has been approved.
Thank you.
All right, so we're just going to introduce new business resolution 40 really quickly by Vice President of Finance.
Oh, is that why you want to do that?
Yeah.
All right, well, then I'm not really going to go through this document at all. This is going to be something we're going to be doing over the course of the next, obviously, we don't have a meeting and then we're going to spring break, but I think it'll be at least two or three meetings where we're going to have to start talking about some changes in this document. These are not the only changes that will come in this document. I don't know why some of the cross-outs are gone. Sorry for the look of it, but basically, just in summary, we allocated the student activity fee in the fall, and we have two governing documents that oversee the violent funding process. Appendix A, and when you say appendix, it means the appendix to our charter. Appendix A details the guidelines for how we can allocate the fee. That's what we did in the fall. Appendix B is our contract with the groups on how they're supposed to operate and how they can spend student activity fee dollars. And we have to update this every time we go through a funding cycle. So in the spring of even years, we update Appendix B, but this can be done on an ongoing basis. So a lot of things will either be antiquated. We realize that an organization needs some more language in what we expect from it based on the past funding process. So that's what we're kind of doing here in this document. Some of the additions are some things that either I moved things around, I made things clearer. So for instance, like now in sections 2 and 3, you have these bolded subject titles that actually describe what's going on that paragraph, where it's not a jumble of words. Some of the things are legitimate changes that we need to really hash out. For instance, float media group, there are going to be some rules as to how they can spend their durable goods inventory, and we need to make sure that we're watching that to make sure that things aren't lost, stolen, and that there are procedures in place for that. And we're also going to need to talk about our student activity endowment fund, but that will be towards the end. But you can see that is included in the Appendix C guidelines. Just an overview of the document. Section 1 is just preamble. 2 is what the SA is expected to do in consultation with the violent funded organization. Section 3 is what all violent funded organizations must do, and then Section 4 is specifically what each of these organizations should do. I'm probably already over 2 minutes there, so.
That's fine. Adam will be sending out, this is pretty much going to take up a lot of the time for the next couple weeks, so just get yourself acquainted with it. If you have any questions, please let us know. It's less intense than the byline process of the fall, but still very important, and so this is basically going to take up most of our meetings. Yeah.
And just a heads up, because Cornell Cinema is required to come to us by Section H1, that they can't raise their student ticket prices without our express approval, they will be coming to DSA sometime after spring break to ask for approval to do that. So also that's on your radar.
Great. So thank you so much. We just passed out the friend-to-friend.
When Laura gave this to me, she didn't give me enough for everyone. So if you have one and you attended the workshop, you could fill that out and give it to me by the end of the meeting today. Take a couple minutes. Like, if you weren't there, pass it along to someone else who was there. I'm going to bring them back to Gannett, and they just wanted to get some feedback from us as to how they could improve the program. So constructive criticism would be a good thing.
But please don't leave. If you were here, please don't leave without filling it out. It takes a couple seconds. I see a lot of you have already done it. We're canceling next week's FA meeting. There is no FA meeting. Don't get too excited, Wolfert. But we're going to be meeting to go through a transition. We have our new presidente, and he wants the old executive board to talk to the new members in case anyone's interested in running for the executive board position, to understand the time commitment, what we do, how glamorous it is, and all the fun that it entails. So we'll be meeting, and then we'll probably have a bit of a social event after. Probably at the so if you guys want to come, we'll have to let you know.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.